If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, it's Manveen here. Today, on Christmas Eve, we thought we'd do something slightly different with Stories of Our Times. If you've been listening to us for a while, you might remember that last Christmas, they let me and David sample quite a lot of wine on your behalf so that we could bring you the authoritative list of what to buy for the festive season. It was a brilliant idea, in theory, but we left an enormous cleaning bill, quite a lot of broken glass, and both of us were hungover until at least New Year. So this year, we thought better of it. Instead, we're going to hand you over to the experts, our sister podcast, The Wine Times, with Makita Oliver and Will Lyons. And joining them this week to pull crackers and drink more wine is the musician and broadcaster, Jamie Cullum. So settle in, with or without a glass in hand, and enjoy a good slosh of Christmas cheer. And from all of us at Stories of Our Times, we wish you and yours a very peaceful Christmas.
Hello and welcome to Wine Times, the podcast brought to you in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club, with me, Makita Oliver.
And me, Will Lyons, the Sunday Times wine columnist and vice president of the Sunday Times Wine Club.
And this show, Will, is quite fantastically all about wine. Red, white, rosé, sparkling.
Italian, French, Australian, South African. And all the rest.
That's right. This series, we're going to be tasting our way through those tannins, which you're going to explain to me what that means later on.
I really don't know.
And we won't be doing it alone. No, not at all. Who do we have, Will?
Oh, you can't do it alone. So every episode, we'll be joined by a well-known guest for some good wine, good times, and good conversation.
This is like so much fun. And remember, the wines featured in this episode and all others are available through the Sunday Times Wine Club. If you haven't signed up yet, there'll be a link in the episode description for you. I mean, I love them. They sent me a huge case of wine already, so I love them.
So whether you're an expert with a broad palate,
or you just tend to stick to the house stuff,
in this show, you're sure to find something that will suit your taste.
We're here in the wonderful Wydadley kitchen. It's beautiful. It's just beside the River Lee in London's Hackney Wick. It's owned by the incredible, vivacious, stunning, talented broadcaster and chef, Andy Oliver, who is a wonderful woman. She's also my mother. Yes, she's my mother.
Sipping and singing with Makita and myself today for our fabulous Christmas special is the musician and broadcaster, Jamie Cullum.
You will all recognise his voice and his jazz show on Radio 2. He was first acknowledged at the British Jazz Awards in 2003, winning their Rising Star Award, and has gone on to win multiple nominations at the Brit Awards, the Grammy Awards, and the Golden Globes. But to get us all in the Christmas spirit, he has also just re-released his ninth studio album called The Piano Man at Christmas, with new songs and all of our favourite classic Christmas tunes. Jamie Cullum, my old friend, hello.
Hi, Makita, how are
so
you?
So nice to see you.
You too, yeah.
It's been a long time.
It's always
time.
Great to meet over a microphone.
Yeah. This is how we like to reconnect. Will, I've known Jamie since I was 20 years old.
Brilliant.
And I don't think we did much posh wine drinking.
No, we didn't.
Okay.
I would say zero posh wine drinking, actually. Negative
some drinking,
zero.
Some yeah. drinking.
Some.
No posh wine.
A little bit.
No posh wine. But today this is all about wine. How much do you really know about wine, or do you just like to drink it?
I am definitely past the point in my life where I pretend that I know a lot about something I don't know anything about. But I have been exposed to really nice wine through the kind of nature of my career. Yeah. Particularly playing in jazz, you go to visit some amazing places. So I've drunk some amazing, amazing wine. Mm. But my knowledge is gratefully and willing to be fulfilled. And that's why I'm really excited to be here, actually.
But can you remember the greatest wine you've had or a moment?
Yeah, I can remember probably two. And I think situation has a lot to do with it. But I play at a festival in Vienne in France, which yes. is near where Condrieu. Yeah. So I had a Condrieu there, which I remember just thinking on the vineyard, which yeah. was just a fine moment. And I had an amazing wine in Napa. I had no yeah. idea how delicious a Napa Valley wine could be. I tried this Rothschild Opus 1
yes.
red, which was like a heart. I was a heart stopper.
And it's as I think we've been talking about on this series. It's the texture of it, isn't it, that gets you the sort of mouthfeel you put it in, and
yes.
it's almost like velvet, but it's. I use the analogy of it, but it can be as light as silk.
Yes,
and then the concentration.
That's a beautiful way to describe it, and I do feel like it is something that that I didn't think I would be able to really recognise until I tried one.
Yeah.
No one was explaining it to me. It's like it was like having a. I liken that wine that I tried, the Napa Valley one, to the first time I heard my favourite album of all time. In Rainbows by Radiohead on really good yeah. headphones.
Yes.
I could hear everything. I could hear every little article in this wine that I didn't know was there.
This is what we've been discussing.
This is literally what we've learned.
And I'll be saying, so exactly that. It's like classical music or great music. Put on Bowers & Wilkins headphones, really concentrate, and someone explains it to
Their
you.
A sponsor?
It's a name. It's the same with.
They might
the
be now.
It could be. It could be after
this. They're just the ones I have.
Oh, yeah,
now, we've decked it out all Christmassy for you, Jamie, which is saying something. Usually there's not even a candle.
That's really nice.
What was Christmas in the Cullum household like? Tell me everything.
Well, I've come to understand Christmas a little bit better now in the context of my family because it was kind of excessively British. Queen's speech, turkey, the kind of thing that you would expect of a British family, despite the fact that it turns out we weren't remotely British.
I was going to say, your mother's Burmese.
Exactly. Burmese Indian. My dad was born in Jerusalem. But I think that's because they all came over here and needed to be as British as quickly as they possibly can. Mm. And that yeah. kind of extended to our Christmases. Yeah. Mm. So it was very, you know, we did stockings and presents and... I'm lucky to remember Christmas as a happy, chaotic affair, lots of family, you know, things in and out of the oven, Queen's speech, falling asleep in the afternoon.
It's nice that the Queen's speech gives the structure to the day, doesn't it?
It does, because you kind of need a structure a little bit.
Exactly.
Otherwise, yeah. it's a lot of people don't
go to church. I mean, we always go to church, but I do like, you can time it round the... You know, do you eat before the Queen's speech or afterwards? It's always a big debate.
Do you have a walk after your Christmas meal, Will?
No, we don't. Well, we're because ours tends to go on and on.
Just
and
saying
then,
the meals.
And then we have presents. So we do presents that we do the stocking at the beginning.
Yes.
And then the big present session after the meal.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, yeah. You have kids?
Yeah, I've got one.
How old is your...
He's 8.
And he waits till after.
You know, he's really good.
Wow.
He's unbelievable. So he... But also, last year, he waited throughout the week. So people said, you know, you've got so much presence, and I think you should open some on Boxing Day.
I feel like I should call child protection.
Who is this?
You wait, wait a week.
That was amazing.
So, and you have daughters.
I do.
Yeah. You have two daughters.
Two daughters, yeah.
Oh, Jamie, you're a dad.
I'm a dad. They're 8 and 10. Oh, I mean, they're goodness. Like, they're fully fledged humans. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And how much did they love Christmas? Do you have to really, you and your beautiful wife, Sophie, do you have to really go in because of the girls?
You know, I think it definitely reinvents Christmas for you. But I think Christmas changes when you become the one that hosts.
Yes.
That's the real moment where you're not going somewhere to Christmas just decompress. You are inviting the chaos into your house. And you want it to go well. I mean, look, I don't think we put too much pressure on ourselves. But, yeah, they love Christmas. But actually, what's really nice about kids and our kids, but I noticed with kids, that they really start to understand at that age how fun it is to give presents to people.
Oh.
They can't wait for you to open the thing they've got at their Christmas fair for you, which... is hilarious, but they're like, they're so excited.
Like, do you like it?
I know exactly, which I really love that. And it's quite corny, all that, the meaning of Christmas, but I think we missed it so much of it last year. And I love that feeling of a table that's too small with lots of people around it and too much food. Just that, if you're lucky to have that, and it feels more precious than ever this year, I reckon.
When was the first time you hosted? Because it is a panic, isn't it? The first time we hosted, I remember getting up and writing a timetable.
Yeah.
Thinking, oh my, well, it really sucks the joy out of it, isn't it?
It's a watershed moment, yeah, isn't it? And it you realise that suddenly you kind of panic about it. So, oh, it's just a big roast. It is not just a big roast. No,
it's lots not. Of things.
And wine, is wine important in the Cullum Christmas household now?
It is important. Yeah, mm-hmm. Of course it is. Of course it is. Important. I think it's either the beginning or a great compliment to an amazing meal. And Sophie's the one you should be interviewing about wine. She knows. You got the wrong. We're not really a 2-for-1 affair. But
no.
So I rely a lot on her. But you know, as I said, I've gathered little bits of information over the years. So I have saved a couple of really nice contrées for Christmas Day.
Oh,
yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
Is that a good Christmas?
The great variety is Viognier. And as we were talking about earlier, it's a slight apricot character, isn't there? And Vienne can get very hot in the summer. So when do you do your festival there?
Yes, it's the earlier part of summer.
I mean, it's one of the hottest places in the world, I think. Yeah. You know, but beautiful, that sort of all that Roman architecture.
Yeah, and the festival happens in one of the amphitheaters as well.
Oh, wow.
So it's a real heart stopper.
And that's like the beginning of the South, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you know, once you go down there, you go down the Rhone Valley, you get to Provence and Avignon. And
where are we starting today, Will?
Well, we're going to start with... So if we're thinking about traditional Christmases, I suppose a really traditional, you might go to church and then you would... I always think of the gravel, you know, and then you get home. I don't know why I think
Will
of that.
Will really paints a picture, by the way. Get ready.
The gravel path. And then it's a cold day, so you have to have bubbles.
Yeah.
And usually you probably have champagne, but I always like to find... Well, what we do in the Sunday Times is we try and get wines that really punch above their weight in terms of taste and flavour. And the big wine that everyone's talking about at the moment is Crémant. So you've had, you know, the big Prosecco boom. And Crémant's just a sort of much more, should I say, affordable champagne. But let's see what you think. So we're in the South.
I'm excited for you to win me over with bubbles,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah, well, we'll see if we can.
So you're not a huge fan of fizz?
I can be. It depends. But I tend to like... I'd probably like Prosecco more than I like champagne. Yeah.
Yes, we've had a lot of that, and I think I've heard a lot of people discuss Crémant, and I was wondering where it lay in that table.
So this is actually from the Limoux. So we're down near Carcassonne, so we're in the south.
Right.
And Makita knows that I love...
Look at that.
Yeah. So the trick is you actually should take the fall off, but you twist... You hold the cork and you twist the bottle.
Mm. It was really quite evocative the way you did it in general, actually.
So if this was our Christmas day, and I'm having it with Will Lyons and Jamie Cullum, fine.
Yeah.
This is how we'd start the day. We've been to church.
Yep.
We've been divorced, and so we've made friends, divorced. And we're just enjoying Christmas.
I would be
to keep me happy, to keep the kid happy.
I would be so boring and just do smoked salmon on bread.
Oh,
I really would.
Bit of good butter.
And also you could do that in the morning. So you could do that before you go to church.
That sounds
good.
Or
even the night before. So it's easy. Keep it simple, as you know, because it's chaotic. So but I was going to say, because I talk quite a lot about history on this podcast. Mm. And Limoux has a claim to be the oldest, or the first place in the world where they made sparkling wine. So although we talked about Dom Pérignon up in Champagne, and we told the wonderful story that Dom Pérignon was a monk, that he was the first viticulturist at the Abbey of Ai. And he was the one that wrote the first book on viticulture. So if you think about jazz, he was like the first guy that actually recorded it. And then he was experimenting by putting sugar and molasses into still wine, because the still wines of Champagne were quite tart. Mm-hmm. And the story goes, he went down to the cellar, but the bottles were exploding because you get a secondary fermentation. And he said, come quickly, for I am tasting the stars.
Oh.
But I once told that story on a liner, on a Cunard ship. I was being a wine guest speaker, and somebody yelled out from the audience, what about the Limoux? And I slightly brushed it off. I was like, what is he talking about, Limoux? And of course, the Limoux is first mentioned in 1544.
Wow.
That they made sparkling wine. It's just a tiny appellation.
God, that's amazing.
They make about 5 million bottles a year. But the great thing is, it's oak fermented, so you get this biscuity.
Can I?
Yeah, of course you can. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Let's taste.
Oh, I actually really like that. Oh yeah, he spits.
Oh, I mean, sometimes I spit, but I haven't seen Jamie in a while, so.
I'm not here to spit.
Because I think around the time of Dom Perignon, so we're talking about, there's evidence that Lemoux made wine, sparkling wine, in 1544. Dom Perignon, 1600, the late 1600s. England, a chap called Christopher Merritt, who was born in Winchcombe in Gloucestershire, and this was only unearthed a few years ago, in 1662, on the 17th of December, so around about Christmas, he presented a paper on winemaking to the newly formed Royal Society, Christopher Merritt, in which he says, if you add sugar and molasses to white wine, you make a wine that is brisk and sparkling. Now, when this was discovered by a very famous champagne author called Tom Stevenson, it sent sort of shockwaves across France, because all of a sudden an Englishman is laying claim to making sparkling wine. So I think the actual reality is it was always happening all over Europe.
Can we claim it?
Well, we can have a good go.
Benedict Cumberbatch plays the lead.
Yes, good
then
casting.
I think, yeah.
You have a race. So who plays Dom Perignon and who plays Christopher Merritt?
Ooh.
And, you, have the and
put,
you can also have the Three Musketeers.
Should we put Ben Kingsley in the Dom Perignon role?
Oh, I quite like that. Yeah, I don't act.
Oh, wait.
But
wait.
You could have a cameo.
Could I have a cameo? Like Ed Sheeran in Lord of the Rings or something, yeah. No, he was in one of those things, wasn't he? Yeah.
No, he was in the one about the Beatles.
He was in, Harry Potter, wasn't
he? Played himself, didn't he?
No, Ed Sheeran did a cameo in, Game of Thrones, I'm sure of it.
Was it Game of Thrones?
Am I making this up?
Yes,
he's nodding.
It's true.
I haven't even seen Game of Thrones, but I know that.
Happens.
I know that.
But I love cameos. I love all-star casts, which they don't seem to do anymore.
Jamie, do you remember when you first started drinking wine? Were you one of those kids who got a little bit at Christmas from your parents?
My parents weren't weird about it, so I remember getting to taste. I remember the first alcohol I had was I got to have shandy with our Saturday night Chinese from Chippenham. I always remember that.
Shandy's quite a strong start.
Probably wasn't even alcoholic, was it?
Well,
it may have been 1%.
I definitely remember loving the taste of a shandy, but I remember it was the first really nice holiday we went on as a family, or a broad holiday we went on, and I would have been about 13 or 14, and we went to a villa in Tuscany, and I remember it was a hotel that was in a villa, and there were lots of other families there, but the eating was the main event.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's the first time I really remember eating with and understanding how delicious food could be and how much of a ceremony it could be. And that's where I tried a couple of, I would have had a Tuscan, I'm just trying to think, it would have been a...
Sangiovese?
No, Chianti.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
right, of course, that's exactly what it would have been.
Oh my God, I love Chianti, is that Tuscan?
Yeah.
Mm. And I remember the first time that the waiter, he came over and naturally poured me a glass, and I could see whether I wasn't sure if my parents were going to let me or not, but actually I did have some, and the combination of it with the food, I definitely remember that holiday being a kind of food...
Yeah, yeah.
Awakening, and it was around the time I was starting to really read a lot, and I was starting to get into
girls.
Do you know what? I've always looked 8 years old for such a long time. It was I was obviously into girls, but they were literally who is this person barely out of the womb that is coming
on
to me?
Who is this child digging on me?
So it was more. I think just I was being awakened to just books and art and music, and it was just I was getting interested in stuff that I didn't necessarily feel a lot of other people around me were getting into. It was a private world of all the cliches that kids that age can get into, Kerouac and Hemingway and weird films. Yeah, I was just really getting into it and starting to love jazz through listening to all the hip hop I was listening to, using jazz and stuff. And
no, I completely
all came at
that.
the same kind of
it's
year.
It's what Stephen Fry said. You open a book and it just takes you on your own private journey, doesn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Yeah.
And I think wine, as we've said, a lot of people discuss how it unlocks a part of you and it makes you sort of think bigger and think about the world. And
Because
your taste
that.
And smell is linked to the limbic system, which is also long-term memory and emotion. So like listening to a beautiful piece of music, you have that same sort of stirring of the souls. And also, and then it releases these long-term memories.
I understand that. And I think also the thing I've become more and more aware of as I've gotten older is that like a beautifully made wine, when you taste it, you're tasting thousands of years of developed expertise.
Yes.
And hundreds of hours of the expertise of the individual that's made it. And I think you're tasting the summation of all that, and it's like listening to music. You're taking in hundreds of years of culture, and again, the amount of hours someone has sat down to get good at what they do.
Yeah.
Expertise, you can kind of taste it if you really think about it and you have a bit of knowledge as well.
So if you think about Champagne, it's, 300 years. I always say that about the great Bordeaux chateaus, is that, they have a track record that is over 200 years old.
Yeah.
Every year they have produced a wine of exceptional quality or very high quality. And you can't buy that.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Wine Times in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club. Remember, the wines featured in this episode and all others are available through the Sunday Times Wine Club. If you haven't signed up yet, there'll be a link in the episode description for you.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times Radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.
Will, where are we going next?
Well, we're going to... So it's Christmas Day.
It's Christmas.
So I think there's two approaches to Christmas. You can either go sort of New World or off-piste, or you can be very classic. And I think today we're being very classic.
Oh, good.
And there is an...
Because I like that.
Classical wine in the world than white Burgundy.
Oh, lovely. Oh.
So we're going to the... And in Burgundy, every department of, gastronomy flourishes. So we're in the east of France. I always like to sort of paint a picture for those listening that haven't been there. So to get there today, we go to St Pancras. We get the Eurostar to Paris. We might have a night in Paris. Get a Willy's wine bar or.
No, it just sounds like such a great date. I'm like, let's do this.
Exactly.
There is a Willy's wine bar owned by Mark Williamson, and it has a great list.
Whereabouts is it in Paris?
It's just off. I would say this. Do you know where the Louvre is?
Yeah.
So it's about 15 minutes walk. No, not even that. 10 minutes walk from there.
Brilliant.
And it's owned by Mark Williamson, who's a Brit.
And is it the place you can go in and they can look after you and
especially they specialise in wines from the Rhone Valley.
Right.
So they would have your Condrieu there.
Right. Ooh.
Yeah. And it's great. And then we would go to Gare de Lyon the next day. And there's a really sort of, it's almost like a Disneyland restaurant, you've probably been there, called Le Trembleur. It is authentic.
But Disney version of a Paris.
It's a huge Paris. What's it, Be My Guest in that?
Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, it's a bit like that.
Yeah.
And they do a steak tartare there. Mm. And if you go in with your suitcase and you say, look, I've literally got 25 minutes, they will do it in 25 minutes, bring you a glass, and then you can step down and you can see the TGV. Then we get the TGV. Having had your glass of Sancerre. So steak tartare, you want white wine, not red wine, but bizarrely. And they do it on the trolley with all the spices.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then you get down.
Can we go after this?
I'm afraid none of this is coming.
It's really sad.
Saturn's not on the way.
Yeah. And then we get the TGV, which are quite boring trains, actually. They're a bit like going on an aeroplane. And that goes down to Dijon. But you switch over at Dijon. You might have about 10 minutes. There's nothing at Dijon station. And it is the most, then, for a wine lover, it's one of the most magical train journeys in the world. Because it's a little local train, so the train's not special, but it cuts through the vineyards. And on the sign, it says, Gevry Chambertin, Vergeau, Neuilly-Saint-Georges, Beaune, Meursault. And then we get off. And this is down in the south. It's in the Mâcon. So let me pour it out.
Yeah, goodness. And a Burgundy, you say, what did you say? It's
Chardonnay. So there's only two grapes in Burgundy. Chardonnay for white and Pinot Noir for red. There's also an Aligoté, a tiny bit that we tasted in our first one.
What a colour.
And it's just a very... This is like...
You have to tell me about Meursault afterwards before I forget as well, because that's definitely a named wine I've enjoyed.
So in France, they believe that the wine takes its flavour from the field, from the vineyard. So they put on the label, not that it's Chardonnay, that it's from the village. So you have the producer, the vineyard, and the village. And the three main villages are Pouligny-Montrachet, Sassagne-Montrachet, and Meursault. And Meursault is the one with that really creamy, buttery sort of rich character.
Yeah, that's exactly how I would describe it. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I
like, and it's one of the most expensive wines in the world. Now this is a Macron.
Here we go.
Go. Ooh. Mm. That was really unexpected. The taste
it's
of that.
Slightly buttery, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got a buttery thing to it as well. Yeah. Kind and of you almost can caramel.
Do you know what's so nice about this? It's quite a. So this sounds really sort of. It's quite a versatile wine. You could drink that throughout the whole day at Christmas because you can start with. You can start with smoked salmon. And then have it with your turkey because it's white meat.
Yeah.
As long as you've lined then, the stomach with smoked salmon, everything will be fine.
And then you can have it with your cheese board.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably not with the pudding, but you know, with your cheese board. And then when the kids are opening the presents or giving you the present, you can still drink. Yeah.
And I wanted to talk about your wife, because you've also been married for quite a long time now.
I have, yeah. Coming up to 12 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you remember wine being part of the early part of your relationship? Like dating, good wine, was that around?
I think it was probably more food than anything.
She does
because
love food.
She does too, love food. We both love food and we both love to cook. And I think when she came to my house for the first time and she realised I had as many cookbooks as she did, she was like, okay, this could. And then when like she saw that I actually read cookbooks sometimes in bed as well, she was like, oh my God, this guy's someone I can really understand. So. And I think naturally by that extension, people who tend to really be into food are also into wine. And I think a lot like, you know, she comes from a lineage of people who really understand wine as well. Mm. You know, her grandfather really, he really understood and adored wine. And I definitely didn't come from that kind of background. There was not like a great knowledge of wine, but an appreciation of good things if we were able to get them. So, but I do feel as though, again, that exposure in my career to just being in a place where they go, are you interested in going to this vineyard and trying? Yeah. Well, I'm like, I'm a curious person and I will go and I will try things and I will enjoy them.
So tell us a bit about the vineyards you've been to. So you went to one in the Napa Valley.
Yes.
Which must have just
Opus
been...
Opus 1.
Opus 1,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, Michael Selachy.
And any others in Europe?
So there are others. So I went to one in San Sebastian, near San Sebastian,
yes.
And I'm afraid I'm blanking on the name in the region. But we toured the vineyard, and then we had lamb chops cooked over vines.
Wow.
Over the vine cuttings.
Over the vine cuttings. Yeah.
Wow.
And again, that experience was paired with the wine, and the guy who runs the vineyard is like a surfer as well.
Yeah.
And it had no kind of had none of the kind of stuffy connotations
exactly.
at all. It was just enjoyable, and it was a great thing about life. It was a great life moment.
And it's a simple moment done well. It's like if you just pulled out, you know, I don't know what you know, you just. Planets where you start playing and you gig, and it's not like you've gone to a concert hall or something like that.
But I think the Europeans do that so well.
Yeah.
It's the uncomplication of things because actually this is complicated enough.
Yeah.
What is going on in this glass?
Couldn't agree more.
And so you don't need to complicate it with fussiness.
I mean, the big thing I learned when I was learning about wine, and it was a restaurateur that said to me, you know, you don't want a dish that overpowers the wine. And if the wine's or if you've got a really good dish, you don't want a wine that's screaming, look at me. It's all about compatibility. But as we say, you know, if you're going around the house as, you know, a collection of wine critics, so we're having great wine, we cook very simple food.
Mm.
And it could be very high quality, but simply done.
Yes.
Because you want to focus on the wine.
I think it's amazing when you go to France and you ask for a steak and you get a steak.
Yeah,
and there's like you look around and go, well, where's all the other stuff that goes with it? And actually go, oh, this is the meal. And I think there's so much to learn from that.
That is funny about as you say about those wine trips. But pre-COVID, I did. You could do sort of 10-day wine tasting trips in France, and you'd eat hot meals, you know, lunch and dinner, and you'd lose weight.
Because it's just a piece of meat.
There's no carbs.
Yeah. You just sold the ultimate health holiday.
It's like sounds incredible. And it's cold outside. It's Christmas. Should we do these?
Yeah, why not?
Oh, wait. So I'll start with Jamie.
Okay. And that, did you do this thing where you win if
I
you
really
get one side?
I did, and I did lose
I've got the big side. Does that mean I've won?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you not know how to do a cracker?
I didn't know Christmas was a... Someone told me that the other day, so I didn't realise crackers were a competition.
Yeah, he's won the game.
I won as well.
Just winning all
I am freakishly
it.
Strong. It's unusual. Yeah.
Yes, there finally. There we go.
You've
right.
got to have one. Come on.
No, yeah, thank you.
No, okay, go
I'm
on,
just
well.
Being, I'm being kind. I've got the weirdest thing in my cracker.
What is
it's
it?
Literally like two triangles. It's allegedly a small magic trick.
I thought it was an instrument.
Yeah, I could. I mean, we could make it into one if that's what this podcast is about.
Our producer is spoiling us today.
You could...
Oh, you appear to have two tiny Allen keys.
I've got the, yeah.
It's Excuse me, an Allen key? No,
no, it's the same. It's a small magic trick.
There's not even a joke. Oh, no, there's a joke. There's a joke.
I got a joke. What kind of pet did Aladdin have? God, this is
carpet?
So... Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. It's just a guess. What do you get if you eat Christmas decorations?
Wait a minute. Tinselitis.
Correct.
Oh,
very good. On. That's actually quite funny, though, isn't it?
Okay. Really
Where's your crap joke?
Yeah, I've got to find it. I've got to rip this open.
I've got
this. White is absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
This is nice. I've just got a little mini playing card ace.
What do you get if you cross Santa with a duck?
Hang on.
Father Quackmas?
Chris. Father Quackmas, jeez, he'd be terrifying, wouldn't he? He'd frighten all the children.
Huge, exactly. Bird-like man.
With a beard.
What is it, Will?
No, but I think Jane was going to get it. It's a Christmas quacker.
It's not that great, is
then
it?
Then we've got Shiraz, but we can't. We'd have time.
No, we've got wine to drink.
But I was
thank
just thinking.
Merry Christmas. That was lovely. Where are we going next, Will? Where's our final destination?
I mean, we would hope that our guests would have a connection with our final wine, and we are. We're going to Tuscany.
There we go. You didn't. That wasn't even in the prep notes, was it?
Let's talk about the album. What a picture of you and Sophie on the front, looking so sexy and glamorous in a cab. Lovely.
That's the miracle of, in my case, the miracle of the camera. Yeah, in her case, not at all.
She's just nice looking.
Do you know, I wanted to do a non-rubbish Christmas album cover. Because I think they're always like, so I'm like, kind of looking at them and go, God, I don't want to listen to that.
It's so true. You did that. You did so well.
Well, thank you. And I wanted to make it a bit like a kind of movie still. And just, you know, one of a great Christmas memory for me is to be in coming back from a really lovely like Christmas party with the person that you're hopefully in love with. And in my case, I definitely am. And I find that's a really romantic. They're some of my favourite kind of Christmas memories. And I just wanted to recreate that.
I love
and
that.
So, yeah, that's what we did. It doesn't kind of
that.
Scream Christmas, but it's hopefully...
No, but it's totally... It screams the season.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, it
I'm really glad that came over. And it was actually... It was a lovely moment because we've been driving around in this old car and a friend of ours was taking the photos and it was... it was
lovely.
Just really... Yeah, yeah, lovely moment.
And you recorded the album at Abbey Road.
I did.
Was that lovely? I love it there.
I mean, this is now become an amazing part of everyone's PR campaign. It's quite amazing, like Abbey Road, but it's the temple of music recording.
Yeah.
It's an incredible place, and to record there is a gift. And this is right after the first part of the pandemic, and there were 65 musicians in Abbey Road doing this. And I felt very lucky. And the first part of this album is 10 original songs that I wrote. So I didn't want to do any Christmas classics on the first part. And to try and write 10 songs that felt very familiar, but brand new. Yeah. And so to do that with an orchestra, again, we recorded all live, you know, in the room. It's just, it was a gift, the real gift. And then this year is I did all the covers that I promised my label.
Okay, fine. Let's see what classics
you went for. I did them in my house as well. That's the funny thing. The first part's in Abbey Road, the second part's in my house.
Well, you did In the Bleak Midwinter.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
That'll get the kids going this Christmas, won't it? Yeah. I love that tune, though.
Me too, it's a tune. Sorry, Will, tell us a little bit about where
we've
arrived.
Can we talk a little bit about Tuscany? Mm. Because, as Jamie sort of hinted at, it's a region that gets under your skin, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's one you can romanticise about. So in terms of wine, you know, that their most famous wine is Chianti, but they have these sort of rich sort of warming breads. But I've got a quote, though, I thought I might read out,
so
if I may. And it's from
the Rock.
No, it's not from the Rock. It's from Alexander McCall Smith, who's a Scottish author.
Oh, I like him. Yes. Yeah, I like him a lot.
And he writes about Tuscany, and I thought this would be quite nice. And he writes, in Tuscany, you absorb the beauty of the place simply by standing in any of the narrow streets or by standing in the great theatrical main piazza, or by simply looking out over the view of the surrounding countryside. An ordered landscape of perfect hills, of tended rows of vines, of small red-roofed farmhouses where farmers have lived for centuries. Everything has been here for a long time and seems to have found its place. Views uninterrupted by the passage of time, unchanged for thousands of years. And it's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's what you were saying earlier.
Yeah. You're right. You said everything has kind of earned its place there over a long, long time.
I've never been.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Why don't we record? I feel like there should be a part two to this podcast.
Yes.
Wow.
In Tuscany,
the Jamie Cullum episode,
exactly.
Part two.
Give the people what they want. I say, you know.
Jamie, do you have a favourite from the day?
Actually, this white was a real surprise to me. I really, really enjoyed
the
that.
The classics, the white burgundy. That
the
is
white burgundy. Mm.
That is kind of blue, though. That's like the classic album.
So did Jamie essentially pick the Miles Davis of the pick?
Yeah, he did.
Of the picks.
Okay, great.
This makes sense. Cheers to Christmas.
Cheers.
Cheers to
Christmas.
Wine.
Cheers to wine.
Jamie Cullum, thank you so much for sharing wine with us today.
Oh, thanks. I'm sad it's over.
I know, it is over.
We've started the mince pies yet.
It's over. Yeah. That's it from us today. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Wine Times in association with the Sunday Times Wine Club, produced by Ben Mitchell.
You can follow the podcast so you never miss an episode. Just do this via your normal podcast provider.
That's it from us today and for the entire series. So thank you so much to all of you who have been on this wonderful wine journey with us.
And remember that all of the wines we tasted in these episodes are available from the Sunday Times Wine Club website.
And thanks again to my parents for my Dadley Kitchen.
And from Makita and I, we wish you a very Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
This is Sandy McCall-Smith again, talking about how we romanticise Tuscany. And he says, is there any harm in harbouring a fond vision of another country, in thinking that there is somewhere on this earth where beauty and music combine to elevate the spirits and make one want to break out into song, or at least pour a glass of Chianti, or Barolo, or even Brunello di Montalcino? Nothing wrong in that. Nothing wrong in that at all.
I love that.
That's quite moving, isn't it?